We will just wait 1 or 2 more minutes while people are joining, and Kurt is letting them in from the waiting room. Kurt, I propose that we make a start.
Okay, very good. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome for this webinar, which is actually part of the Belgian Mass Alliance. And within this alliance, we have 3 to 4 times a year, we have what we call an all-hands meeting. So during this meeting, this webinar, actually, we give an overview on what is happening within Mass in Belgium. So 360 degrees. And for obvious reasons, this webinar today will focus on Mass after the Corona crisis. First, some practicalities. So please keep your mic and your video off at all time. This will help a lot, I think. Secondly, Peter and myself will guide you through this webinar. This webinar is also being recorded, so if you disagree with this, please let us know through the chat box. We've also circulated the participants list through the meeting invite, and we will also share all the slides with you afterwards. And if you have a question, please put it in the chat box. We will moderate this after each presentation, and there's also a discussion foreseen at the end of this webinar. To make it a bit interactive today, we also make use of a Menti as a warming up question. So it's quite easy to use Menti, or you can scan the QR code, or you go to the website and enter the code, which you see on the top of the slide. A first question would be just to get an idea or just to get to know the system. The answers are popping up, I see. Okay, this was just to let you know how the system works. A second question that we have, always interesting to see who is in the participant list. And we will also use Menti later on to start the discussion. Okay, thank you. Just in a nutshell, I think that most of you will know ITS Belgium and why we are organizing these meetings or webinars. Well, we are a public-private association active within the mobility domain, and we aim for sustainable mobility through ITS, Intelligent Transport Solutions. So we stand in between authorities and companies, the private side. So we represent quite a large network of sector federations, large and smaller companies, authorities on all possible policy levels in Belgium. And we try to align, we try to harmonize the best practices that exist. For instance, in a city that another city won't do something totally different. And this way is we try to align, create consensus on specific topics. And with our network, we have 4 priorities. So the one that we will deal with today is to do with mass mobility as a service. For each of those four priorities, we have an action plan existing of five axes. And through this this webinar, we try to give an answer on the current developments on each of these developments or each of these axes. So this brings me also to the agenda of today. Like I said, today is a bit different because we will mainly focus on the situation today and the situation after Corona. So that's also why we've invited this nice mixture of speakers. And this is also the agenda that all of you received in the meeting invite. And well, that was more or less all I wanted to say. So I'll hand over the word to Peter.
Thank you very much, Kurt, and welcome, everybody. We have indeed a very interesting and exciting mix of speakers. So my introduction will be very short. I think all of us followed with great interest, not just the recent developments as far as mobility is concerned, new evolutions, but also policy measures being put in place. Next slide, Kurt. And some obvious things that are popping up that I think most of you will agree with: the acceleration of digitalization and telework that we see, that of which we believe that some of it will stay. We see, of course, also some pressure for increased individual car use, especially towards cities, while within cities and around them, biking is greatly promoted. Some increased extra pressure points that can maybe be resolved by infrastructure, multimodal infrastructure, such as park and rides and multimodal hubs, transfer machines, as Dirk Lauwers, one of our speakers, is calling them. And so obviously we see that public transport is suffering for the moment, but we see great opportunities for shared mobility and mass, not just to relieve some of the pressure points between modes. We think it is an NN story towards the future, but also to make mobility more resilient. And so my last slide, we will be hearing from many, like I said, interesting speakers about mobility after Corona. Next slide, Kurt. And one of the questions that we will pop up at the end, and we're greatly interested in having your view on it, is what policy measure can be the most impactful to facilitate, to support multimodality and mass? And here are again some examples that are popping up in our network. As I said, the multimodal hubs at the entry of our cities, mobility budgets, the need for real-time information on occupancy, on busy spots for public transport, also contactless payment. And you will not be surprised, we are also sensitive for the relationship between the public transport operators, the mobility providers as a whole, and the mass providers, and how this relationship will evolve. These are just some teasers, some examples. Again, the real topic today, please, next slide, Kurt, is to have different views on the future of mobility with Corona. And without further ado, we will actually start with the Brussels perspective. And there, Stefan van den Hende will take the floor for us. Stefan, the floor is yours. We should unmute you.
Unmute. Yeah, the unmute button had disappeared for a second there. Hi, everyone. As Peter said, my name is Stefan van den Hende. I work for Minister Elke van den Brand, Regional Minister for Mobility in Brussels. Now let's see, how do I go forward? Oh, there we go. Basically, for all measures we've implemented in the last couple of weeks/months, we've started from our Good Move plan. Good Move is our sustainable urban mobility plan that some of you might know already. You can go to goodmove.brussels if you want to have a look, if you haven't yet. It's a very, I believe, interesting and strong plan we have now for the next 10 years. And the European Commission seems to have agreed, as they awarded us our plan, a SAMP award just a couple of weeks ago. So we're very proud of the plan, but now we're working full-time, basically, or more than full-time, to actually implement it and make sure that it's also visible in the streets. When COVID started, these are some older numbers, but I think you've seen them in many places in Belgium. So I won't go into too many details, but basically car traffic was down massively in all of Brussels. Our transport, our public transport, mainly STIP MIVB, its capacity was very much down. Its usage was also down. But what we did see also is that very fast, we don't have pedestrian numbers. There was no counting at the moment. But we did see that active modes were up, at least biking. While it initially in the beginning of the lockdown was very much down in numbers, it quickly went up again, especially now still during weekends, time off, we see a huge increase in biking and in people on bikes. So with those things in mind, knowing that Brussels is very car-centered, and if the modal shift has happened in the last years, it has mainly gone to public transport. We now saw some opportunities to speed up the implementation of Good Move in the last couple of weeks. I'll skip through this. So really, we saw an urgency, basically. We needed to have a quick alternative to public transport, because if we just went for cars, well, Brussels would have even more traffic jams. We needed to find measures to increase social distancing in the streets, because also because of the high amount of parking on street in Brussels, that was a problem. We needed to generally go towards the relance, and that's what we're working on now in the next weeks and months, is to also link up again with the economy. So we decided to take the philosophy of Good Move and see what we could speed up in the near future. I'll skip this as well. So Good Move is centered around six visions or six action groups. And I'll just skip through those and explain how we used which action group to go faster. One is Good Move Neighborhoods. It's basically the idea that we've divided Brussels in 50 neighborhoods. And in the next 10 years, the idea is that there will be circulation plans in all 50 neighborhoods in the next years. We're now still working on that. They just came from another meeting where we determined determining the first 10 neighborhoods that will implement in this sense. And we're still going full ahead but at the same time now during COVID, we saw a chance to more quickly implement some residential zones, woonerven, I guess the term is zone residentielle. And so we went ahead and we sent out a call to the communes because that's woonerf doesn't really fit on the bigger regional roads which we from the regional level maintain. It's mainly a thing you can adapt in smaller communal roads in Brussels. So in that sense, we had quite a high response and we've been able to implement a high number of new woonerf in the last couple of weeks. And we're still working on those. The big one that many of you might have seen in the media is the one in the Pentagon, the city center here, that's been completely put into woonerf mode. We're still working on that. Yesterday, there was a working group still where we're still adding extra measures to actually enforce also more and more the speed limits. And in any case, the city of Brussels and us were working together then to go back to Good Move on the first calm neighborhood, Maille Apaisée in French. So the idea was really to give more space to people, to cyclists, to people who are walking, and to move quickly forward with that. At the same time, we've made some parks car-free, and only just yesterday, as some of you might have seen, we made a deal on actually making Tercamen and Bos La Cambre almost completely 80% car-free from 1st of December, September onwards. That's what we did when it comes to Good Neighborhood, Good Network then. So first thing we did very quickly is we've been slowly in Brussels, we've basically been attaching all our lights to a central system. That's not completely done yet, but we're continuing that. But that made that because about 140 lights were already attached to that central, we were very quickly able to adapt a big part of the Brussels traffic lights in favor of, again, those active modes, because we saw that traffic was down. And so in order to avoid traffic jams, and I mean on traffic jams of pedestrians and bikes, we quickly adapted those lights. And we've now put in place a task force to see how we can continue on that in that way in the middle and long term when it comes to traffic lights adaptations. We're also, as part of Good Move, working on a whole new cycling network. So the idea is basically that wherever you make, as I said before, city the 50 neighborhoods, that Brussels also becomes 100% cyclable. And for that, we've also identified higher level cycling networks, the Bike Plus and Bike Comfort and networks especially. And basically what we've done now is we've looked at where are places where with some light measures, meaning paint and concrete blocks mainly, because that's what we could do on the short term, where can we build missing links in our network? Where can we quickly accelerate the implementation of the Velo Plus network, the Bike Plus network? And so that's how we came up with this 40 kilometers of bike lanes that we're now implementing. The most visible so far has been the Rue de la Loi Wetstraat that you probably saw in the media, and we're now continuing that implementation. And many of the plans are almost ready or already are being implemented. There'll be some this weekend, more next week, so we're going full speed ahead with those 40 kilometers to really take the pressure off of the main roads by giving active modes more place. And you see, if you put the two together, on the top left, you have what we did now in Corona times. The top right is the Velo Plus network. And if you put those two together, you see how we've really just in a faster way implemented our Good Move plan. And when it comes to good service, as we've been doing for the last years, or the Brussels region has been doing for the last years, even without our minister, there's been a lot of investments in public transport. There's a multi-year investment plan that we've continued to implement, that we're continuing to implement. But we've seen now that public transport is under pressure. In the meantime, our MEVB STEEP is back at a 100% capacity, give or take. On some lines, it might differ. But we've had to quickly adapt and add protection of users, of our personnel. There's been quite a lot of talk about that. We've changed to only paying by card. Masks have become obligatory, as all of you know. But the main message we've been spreading is please leave public transport to those who really need it. And if you have another way of transporting yourself, do use it. And especially then do go use active modes. In a normal time, we've also been working on MaaS, as some of you might know, where it's in full development here in Brussels. We're adapting the Vienna model. Normally on 20th of April, we were supposed to start a first test of our MaaS app, or of the MEVB STEEP MaaS app, with 2,000 users that would use the app for 6 months to really test it. But unfortunately, that's been postponed because, there was no usage of public transport at that time, hardly any. So it didn't really make sense to go ahead. But that doesn't mean we've stopped the development. MEVB has also launched now, because they have more time to prepare the tests, survey to all the users to even better track how they change maybe while using how they change their ways while using a MaaS. And then we're still working internally on the full development of MaaS. Another thing we've done then is also our normal planning. We're investing in park and rides together with the Flemish region. Also, we're in close contact with them. We're investing in a bunch of park and ride parking lots in Brussels and just outside of Brussels. What we were able to do now is to add one very short term, basically a semi-public parking lot at the Hazel Brussels Expo. You see it on top of the chart. We were able to Fastly open it up for free for users. And at the same time, we made a partnership with Velo, our existing bike sharing system, public bike sharing system, and then also some private partners. They're not all on here, but Billy Dot were the principal ones who also reinforced their services at those park and rides very quickly together with us. And so we were able to also offer those who still have to commute to Brussels an alternative for arriving into Brussels by car. Good choice then. So we were planning a bunch of communication campaigns anyway. Many of those had been canceled then because of COVID. There was no one on the street, so why do a campaign at that time, at that point? What we did do is we communicated largely on respecting speed rules, because we saw that there was an increased speeding. There was more place in the streets, less users, but more place. So the speeds were going up. So we communicated widely about that, and police continued and also communicated about the speed checks they were doing. And then we already during the lockdown, we promoted bike usage via the existing campaign. And we've now just basically right after the lockdown launched another Bike from Brussels campaign that's specifically targeted towards getting people who during lockdown switched to biking to have them continue biking, or those who haven't yet to start biking. And we're still pushing that campaign is ongoing very much. Good partner, then I'll skip that to not use up too much time. That's mainly about how we dealt with the setbacks we had when it comes to our Werven Chantier. I can't think of the English word for a second now, but well, that's basically my presentation. I see in the chat.
Thanks, Stefan. This is Peter coming in. I just indeed wanted to tell people that we are using the chat functions to channel some questions to our speakers. And an interesting first one of Stan, Stefan, I also noticed you're announcing 20,000 places for bike and rides in Brussels, multimodal hubs. At the same time, when I look at your map, you have about 1,000 places at this moment. So how do you get 1,000 to 20,000? What's happening?
I think there's been a mistake there. I'm not sure about the. I think it's actually 10,000. I think a colleague of mine made a mistake in the preparation. But I think 10,000 is what we're aiming for at the moment of places in total in Brussels. So we were able to create one with about 1,000 places in urgency. For the rest, we're working on long-term increasing the total number of places. For example, just before the previous elections, the parking area was opened up. We're working, we've had the permit, I think, for a new one in the north, and we're working on some others as well. To be fair, I'm not a park and ride expert of the cabinet. So, and when it comes to the question of if we already see the impact, I haven't received the numbers yet. We only launched this 2-3 weeks ago. So I haven't personally seen the numbers yet. I don't have the usage number yet. We know that some of the park and rides were underused, especially Seria, the newest one. And we were also we were also supposed to launch in spring a communication campaign about that. So we postponed that a bit and have launched now in order to urge people to use Seria more often as well, as its occupation rate so far weren't the highest. But I don't have the latest numbers yet.
We see some more questions, Stefan. One of Dirk on cycling measures. Try to create parallel access to public transport.
Well, some of them, yes, not necessarily all of the bike links. For example, the access Rue de la Loi is very clearly parallel to public transport. or other parts, but it wasn't a specific focus like in Paris. For us, we were mainly looking at where are important access for bikes where we have missing links. That's, for example, why we saw Rue de la Loi was already oversaturated, or Louisa were adding some measures. So we mainly looked at what are missing links in our Bike Plus network, and how can we, where are places where we can quickly also, because the things we were able to do were limited. As I said, we could only use paint and concrete blocks, basically. So we just looked at, okay, where can we quickly fill up holes, important holes in our existing network? When do we plan to promote public transport again? I think that depends a lot on what's happening on the federal level. We don't have a clear timeline on that, as long as there's the advices that are there from the federal government. So there's no time limit at the moment from our side.
Very clear. I just have one last question maybe for you, Steve. One more question, sorry.
In the choice now, we had to move so fast, really, in those weeks. I think we basically nailed down the list in about 1 week. We didn't specifically preemptively include citizens groups, but it's based on the Velo Plus network, which is part of Good Move. And Good Move has been widely discussed and debated with all those citizens groups. So we know what their wishes are. We have a pretty good view of what our network is, especially the Velo Plus network. So it was based on really Good Move, which was widely concerted. We're now discussing how we continue, if more is needed. And at that phase, now we have a bit more time. We're definitely planning to include, do a wider consultation, but that's still to be determined how we continue after this. At the moment, we're still fully focused on the 40 kilometers. And we're linking up with the citizens group to discuss the plan still in 2 weeks to see if there's small improvements still needed. And with about the park and rides and cooperation, on the short term, we didn't link up with them now. But on the long term, we're working with Flanders, for example, on coordinating the different park and rides they're implementing, adapting them to our network as well. There's been a joint study, I think, in 2017 between the two regions. So we have quite a good idea of where the interesting places are to put park and rides. And we have a very good relationship at the moment with the Cabinet Peters. So those discussions are definitely will continue, I think.
Very interesting. You've been super efficient, Stefan, not just in taking us through your presentation, but also the questions. We, of course, look very much to the developments linked to these questions. For instance, the park and rides, we ran a webinar some time ago on the Luxembourg park and ride models and saw how they were networked also into Germany, France, and Belgium. So it would be very great to see that cooperation between regions materialize into a map with connected, let's say, hubs across the regions. Thank you very much, Stefan. I will keep the pace. We will come back to you possibly at the end.
Thank you for inviting me. I unfortunately have to go now because I have another meeting in 15 minutes that I still have to prepare.
So that means that we
the invitation.
Think of many interesting suggested policy measure for you at the end of the talk. But thank you, Stefan, for joining us and see to
Happily.
You. Look at you later. I propose that we move on to the second presentation of Dirk Lauwers, who will give us some insights in the new mobility from a spatial planning perspective. Dirk, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I hope you can all hear me. Good afternoon. And I'll try to also to move the screen that isn't working at this moment. I see. I hope you can hear me. Yes, the screen is moving. So this shows you also, my focus, because spatial planning is of course a broad perspective. On the one hand, I will broaden it even more and talk about space and inputs of different disciplines like mobility planners and urban designers related to the space, to the road space. And with this picture, I think this focus becomes clear. I will deal less with the more systems approach. That is, of course, also at least as important. But this my focus now relates more to the discussions that we had the past weeks on how to redistribute road space in view of what is happening now. And just going back to history, you can see that the way we are viewing, looking at this space is, of course, related to the time frame where we're living in. And of course, this during this the past weeks, the disruptive way mobility changed and also the use of the space changed help us to look at with, let's say, a more fresh eye on this. A starting point is, of course, also that road space and space in general is related to how mobility is organized in an efficient or less efficient way. And we can not talk anymore, I think, in terms of flows of vehicles. Only we have to talk if we relate to accessibility of cities, of functions, in terms of flows of people. And then, of course, the efficiency, the space efficiency of the different modes has to come into the discussion. And this discussion, of course, is not only a discussion on efficiency, but also, of course, a discussion on prerogatives that are more or less common or became common in our way of organizing the mobility. I'm sorry that sometimes maybe it takes some time because there are some seconds of time lapse between the moment I push the button here to go to the next slide. And this one also shows it that of course how we distribute the spaces is changing a lot in how mobility can be organized. And referring to the vice mayor of Milano, there is a discussion going on that maybe now is the time to act, to make decisions and to act even. And the vice mayor of Milano, one of his famous sentences is that 2030 is now, meaning that if we don't act now, we won't be able neither to implement our goals that we have put it in our plans for 2030, because now changes are so dramatic and will be go on for some years, the model shifts and so on, that it will be very difficult if we don't take action now to obtain our goals in 2030. And a lot of international organizations like International Transport Forum, that is acting within the frame of the OECD, is stressing this, that it is important to re-space our cities for resilience and, of course, also to adapt now to the COVID situation. Just very quick to show that maybe we experienced a quite different period in our lives regarding mobility, but maybe we don't always look with the open view of not only our point of view, but of the society in general at what happens. Because also in the pre-corona times, one quarter of the people in Flanders was locked down in a certain way in their homes. They didn't left their home in a normal weekday. Only 75% of people leave their homes also in pre-corona time. And of course, this is related to almost half with people that are really choosing for this. For other half, it is related to people that have a problem, that have the problem of transport poverty and bad service, in fact. Then another thing is, the new concept that was launched, and I think in many countries, to limit to essential travel. Often we regard what is happening during peak hours as mostly essential travel, also in pre-corona times. So this was true for the morning peak, more or less 2/3 of traffic at that moment, of travel at that moment in the morning peak is related to commute and can be regarded as essential. But in the evening peak, even 2/3 or even more at some moments is related to other motives of travel. Now let's speak about the future and the post-corona indeed. Of course, there are a lot of uncertainties, and one is, of course, what will happen with the virus. Will there be second and even third new curve that has to be flattened? And what will happen with other crises? Having now this period of drought, for example, that is coming for the next months, probably, here in our countries. We will have also to deal with the crisis of the climate and related to transport. What will happen with our inland waterways? So will they be functioning the coming years as planned? What about the post-corona now? Other ones related to mobility itself. One thing we think, probably we know, is that the role of public transport will be less than it was before because of this reduced capacity, spatial capacity of the system. On the other hand, the question is indeed what will happen with the individual public transport, the shared mobility. Can it take it over, maybe together with cycling in general, the role at least of the urban public transport? About these active modes, one assumes that the share will be more important the next period. Also, it was more important, and it was already introduced by for the Brussels presentation. But another thing is that physical distance, the 1.5 meter distance, will be probably also a very important measure. Now, this, if you refer to one of the first slides on the maps of capacity, the mayor of the former mayor of London and now the Prime Minister Boris Johnson, he knows all about this. He was the mayor there, and he promoted cycling, and now also at the level of Great Britain, cycling is promoted, and also car-free cities. It seems quite sure that we will need more space for these active modes. On the other hand, maybe an alibi could be the face masks to allow anyway crowding in the public space the next years. What will be the post-corona, the next weeks and months and years? If you look back, also data were already showed for Brussels. They are more or less equal for Flanders, so I will skip this. But from this position, how to restart? Probably we will need really not a restart, but a reset button. And of course, mobility has to do with where you want to go, and many of the destinations will change probably dramatically. One of them being the shopping street, the shopping centers. Density will be lower of people, of services there, and this will change probably dramatically our mobility system. Another thing that we now have seen more clearly, that mobility is not only about where you want to go, it's also about where you want to be. So not necessarily from A to B. So there is the jogging, there is the cycling, there is just wondering about that something seems important. Starting from this lockdown and these experiences, mostly we can stress two diverting scenarios. One is about more car use, and if you look at Germany at this moment, the volume of car use and car traffic is already at the level of the pre-corona. And of course, also the car industry is trying to come back. Now, related to this, maybe this can also lead to suburbanization, further suburbanization. A lot of special planners and researchers are writing about this, that maybe people will leave the city more than even more than before. So this is also a challenge, and of course this is also related to our mobility, modal choice, but also how trips will be organized in future. So, but this is the first scenario. So more suburbanization, more car traffic. There is a second one, and this depends on steering policies, as the one that was described for Brussels. And so based on Bannister, who is the founding father of the sustainable mobility paradigm. And so he sees four types of actions. That's avoiding travel, that is shorter trips, modal shift, and improving technology. So what you could call the ASME. So these are the four fields of action to obtain a more sustainable mobility in his paradigm. So I now added another one related to the fact that public space is also the space to spend time, not only to try to leave as soon as possible this space because you want to go to a final destination. And so by spatial planning, we also have to add this time spending in space as an important planning and design issue. So starting from our lockdown experience and situation, maybe we have better chance now to obtain this first principle of avoiding travel. So all the e-learning, the e-conferences, the e-working in general is now much more familiar, and also the software is more shared and so on. So we have probably this will stay for longer. Also, there will be, and maybe here masks can be also important, there will be also an issue of trying to avoid too much people concentrated in some spaces, be it public spaces, be it also private space. So this means that we need as well a dynamic use of the road during the day, as we have to regulate, to monitor. The word monitor is coming two times. It means also to manage, of course, this concentration. The second principle in the ASMED policy, the sustainable mobility and urban development policy, is to obtain shorter trips. And there we have some models, and Brussels is inspired a lot by the Paris model, contains two elements. One is the 15 minutes city, so to have denser and multifunctional neighborhoods to develop it and to also enhance walkability and bikeability in these areas, and then also to connect these centers one to another with, of course, especially quality biking infrastructures. The third one is about modal shift. This is to have less cars and more active modes, especially and maybe shared mobility the coming period. And there, of course, we need also to interact with the volumes of the car traffic and the speed. Then modal shift also, what is important there is, of course, the traffic regulation, the traffic circulation, and this is related to what is called UVAR, the urban vehicle access regulations, the low emission zones, but also traffic circulation plans and so on, and then the redistribution of road space in favor of active modes. The fourth principle is improving technology, and this is related to mass and so on, and interfaces with the user, but of course also with the technology of the cars and the traffic management themselves. Then regarding to the fifth principle, the time spending in space, there, this varies, could change a lot. If you look at these pictures where, let's say, to protect oneself and maybe some other people in the bubble from being contaminated, this might lead to a quite other way of interfering with people in cities and in towns. And also this will relate to the spaces that were always seen for or already organized for the use of the people. But also there will be an interference with the road space in town centers and city centers in order to have terraces and so on that will need more space. What can experts and researchers do for the moment? Of course, we have to look in a very critical way at our strategic documents. If you look at, for example, the Flemish policy plan, this relies a lot on a backbone of public transport, nodes, on modality that are related to this public transport. So we have to think really about this. Another fact is that the tactical urbanism is becoming more and more important. We have to act quick. So it means that also we have to work with pop-up interventions and so on. Mostly they are related to the public authorities, to the city administration that wants a new design of a certain street, but sometimes also they can be related with citizens groups and that can propose themselves some new actions there. What also will be important is to be more flexible, to be resilient. Spaces will be to be more adaptive. Maybe there will be other crises, but also now we see that it can be important just to downscale or to upscale spaces for cars and others, depending on the season, the day, and indeed what is needed related to a certain crisis, maybe. And now this crisis gives us also an opportunity to make real life tests of some redistribution of space. These are some examples from Barcelona. Some redistributions were integrated based just on colors of the street. And it is not only a European movement now. So here you see pictures from New York and from Auckland in New Zealand, showing that also in other parts of the world, engineers, urbanists, designers are working at another use of the public space, at least at some moments. And so these real life tests can also can learn us a lot for future. This was my presentation. I hope I was more or less within the time frame. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dirk, for this sharing this insights. We are looking again at the chat. So I'm not sure whether you see it as well, Dirk. Maybe with some short follow-up questions. First one is, what of the behavioral change will stick after Corona? If there is, let's say, one or two behaviors of which you really think that they will be lasting, which ones are these?
Yeah, I think the business-driven ones have a good chance, right? Because they are based on efficiency and cost efficiency and so on. And so, e-working and e-conferencing and so will stay there, I think, at least to for a part of the way we will work in the future. This is one. The ones related to personal behavior, there maybe there is a stronger relation with the policy of our governments, of our cities. If you look at another crisis, the oil crisis in the 70s, in the United States, the cycling and buying bikes was more popular than in Holland at that moment, in the late 70s. But in Holland and also in Denmark, a policy was developed to build networks for cyclists, to have car-free city and residential areas, to have lower speeds and so on. So it became more popular to stay cycling in Holland and Denmark. And it disappeared more or less or in the United States, because there a more car-centric policy was followed. So it will depend on cities, on regions, on countries, and what type of policy they develop.
Yeah, and then Dirk, maybe a last quick one. In ASMIT, you talk about modal shift, but multimodality, combined use of modes, and maybe even, I would say, combined scenarios of one and two, people driving towards the city and then wanting to switch. Is that something you accommodate, see happen?
Yes, probably. Huh? Probably the car will be the winner in the intercity travel in the cities, or at least in some cities, cycling and also micro mobility and walking will be probably survive lead to a shift. So probably yes, and it will be a challenge to connect both scenarios at a certain moment. And yes.
Very clear, Dirk. Again, rich presentation and food for thought. I propose that we move on to the next presentation, since we want to foresee some interaction at the end of the webinar. And the next perspective is a contribution of Laurent Willaert, and the automotive perspective on mobility after Corona. Laurent, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Peter. Laurent Willaert from Fabiac. I will take a few moments of your time to discuss MaaS from the automotive perspective. The industry is working hard on that as well. And I think there could be some interesting developments. Next slide, please. So very briefly, for those who do not know Fabiac, we represent the automotive industry in Belgium and Luxembourg. Both cars, motorcycles, vans, trucks, buses, also mobility service providers, some MaaS operators, and also some charging infrastructure operators. So we are pretty much across the value chain. And we do a couple of things. Probably everybody knows the Brussels Motor Show. And we also have a policy department. We do interest representation. And we are also analyzing automotive data from vehicles, statistics as well. Next slide, please. Thank you. The industry is going through a major transition. This has been going on for some time now. As you can see, the five big ones, often people call it ACES. I always add multimodality to it because I think people in the future will be more flexible in the way they choose their mode of transport. Even if they own a car, even if they own a bicycle, they're probably not going to own a bus and public transport. But anyway, they will be more flexible in the way they choose. And one day they will maybe take their own car. Next day they may cycle. It will vary, and that's a good thing because it will help. Change the mindset in becoming more flexible. Environment transition, that's clear. Automation of vehicles, that is also something that is happening, but it's quite slow. It's probably not something that will happen in the short term. I'm talking about fully autonomous vehicles. That's quite complicated. Connectivity, I will talk a lot about that and sharing economy. Next slide, please. So these are the three topics that I will address within the framework of MaaS in the next couple of years after Corona. The two other ones are a bit less relevant. Next slide, please. So what are the short-term observations and possibly with long-term effects of COVID-19? Perhaps I should refer to the sentence at the bottom of the presentation, which is, it's a huge disclaimer. These are predictions based on assumptions. They're not facts. And history shows that we're pretty bad at predicting human behavior in the longer run. So it remains to be seen. But I guess we will be using more video conferencing and will be reducing our needs for mobility and transport. We will be working from home more often, at least for those who can. We should never forget that there are a lot of people who cannot work from home. And then if those 1.1 and 2 happen, then we may see a need for more individual, or at least what I would call tailor-made transport solutions, not just for people, but also for goods. Perhaps it could be that if people work more often from home, they will rely more often on e-commerce, for example. So post-COVID-19, increased potential, I think, for mobility as a service, tailor-made solutions, and transport as a service. This does not mean that in the longer run there will be no role for public transport. I think that, yes, public transport probably is hit in the short term. I do think that in the longer run, if things are solved, then we may resume to some sort of previous behavior where people just use public transport as they used to do in the past. I'm not sure the comparison with the terror attacks a couple of years ago is a good one, but then there as well you saw that people were very reluctant at the beginning, and then they tend to go back to their previous behavior and use various modes of transport. Now, when we look at MaaS over the last couple of years, we have seen that there were a lot of new initiatives. They were all popping up, different modes of transport, be it shared cars, be it bicycles, steps, etc., scooters. But one of the things that we see is that it's very hard to make them profitable. In fact, there are very few that are really, really profitable, not just in Belgium, but just across the globe. And I think the big question should be, how do we move beyond a mass environment where new initiatives are launched and where they falter afterwards? But how can we make these initiatives more sustainable? Economically sustainable, financially sustainable, but also socially and environmentally. There have been some issues with some providers. I'm sure they can be addressed, but I think it's important that we do address them. And I think that from our perspective, one of the key things is to bring those different, these individual applications, the various applications together into one ecosystem, which is MaaS. But how do we offer that, we put this forward to the client? Now, there are various ways of doing it. And I think I just want to talk about how the automotive industry is working with MaaS to deliver a product to their customers. The automotive industry, well, as maybe some of you know, 60 billion euros a year in R&D. That's just in Europe. That's just a fact. Some of that money is going into new products and digitalization and automation. And one of the things is that the automotive industry is also evolving from only the product to a service. And of course, the product that's linked to it, because they're still making hardware. But what we do see, and it's really something that's coming up increasingly, which is that when a customer buys a vehicle, they increasingly also buy a service add-ons. And I will talk about a bit more later about what type of service add-ons, but it's really something that we're seeing. All brands have now their own applications and subscriptions for services, and we do see that a lot of customers want to use them. And so these vehicles are increasingly developing as a digital services platform, where there's an integration between the vehicle and other types of services that are being offered. They can be linked to mobility and transport, but it's increasingly going much further than that. And I think the next step is, of course, to develop this mobility ecosystem with partners. We need integration and we need to cooperate. Next slide, please. This is a slide that I took from Accenture. It's an illustration, and it pretty much shows the scope of the activities, ranging from, on the left, buying a car, to the right, to public transport. And then you have a wide range of using usage of mobility services. The interesting bit I find is this slide is from 2018. And when you look at the names of some of the brands mentioned, they have already changed. Some of them, the names have changed. And interesting, it also reflects how quickly the mobility environment is evolving. Next slide, please. This slide is pretty much is the wrap up of how the automotive industry is looking at MaaS from the so how they are putting it into the market for their customers. So it's we have the car, it's a platform, data is being generated, is being used, and it allows the user of a vehicle to interact with a wide number of services. Some of them are directly linked to the vehicle. It could be vehicle repair and maintenance. It could be taxation. It could be all other. Or it could be inspection of the vehicle. Some are linked to the infrastructure and mobility directly, so traffic management, road safety, but also linked to other types of mobility, sharing, pooling, multimodal services like public transport, park and ride, payment systems, etc. And then we're actually moving beyond that as well. Infotainment, music, but maybe also, at a later stage, booking of hotels, restaurants, etc. So there is definitely a potential to use a car as a platform for interaction with the, as I call it, the outside world, and definitely to integrate the car into a, what I would call, an advanced mobility ecosystem. Next slide, please. just another illustration to well-known brands who decide to set up to work together and to set up what I would call a mobility ecosystem. Of course, it will evolve. These are just two examples of this is just one example of two brands, but there are many other brands that are doing it as well. And they've brought together all their applications for charging, for EVs, for multimodal services, taxi, ride hailing, parking, car sharing. They're all integrating this and that I guess will soon also be available through the applications from these brands. So that's an illustration. I could give other examples as well, but I mean, we're not gonna run through all the initiatives. So this is just the final final slide. Couple of points. The key thing here is to focus on the end user needs and the customer experience. That's not always easy because, of course, public authorities and regulators have their own agenda. And that sometimes clashes with what the customer wants. So it's a difficult balance to strike. We believe that integrating all those various services into platforms is absolutely crucial to make it work. So you need a mobility ecosystem. The challenge there as well is to make private and public operators work together. There's a whole debate about access to data and ticketing. And then there's various models as well for MaaS. You have open systems with a lot of competition, and then you have what I would call closed systems where the public authorities take the lead and the design one model, one application that should be used by all operators. But again, the key thing is we need to focus on a model that stimulates innovation, that allows technology to evolve, and that allow people to make choices on how they want to move. So I would refer back to point number one. The focus is it's the consumer and it's the end user's needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laurent. Interesting views, and also I would say final considerations, putting the end user first. You might have been looking as well at the chat, Laurent, and maybe two kind of questions. You have, of course, a very good view of on what is happening within the automotive world. Can you imagine navigation systems evolving towards more multimodal navigation or trip planning, booking, or is that more a pre-trip activity in your view?
I'm quite sure that the digital display where the navigation system is also used in the car, but the digital display will be used in the car to make all sorts of reservations, including trip planners, multimodal as well. Probably will evolve into an integrated payment system. Of course, the system behind it must allow it. So if you cannot buy an integrated public transport ticket today, it will be very difficult to sell it through a platform of a car. But yes, I'm quite sure that this will happen. So we will have cars becoming multimodal platforms for their users.
Yeah, very clear. And then maybe one more. We will come back to this at the end of the webinar. We will ask the input of all participants on what is actually the most impactful policy measure for MaaS and for creating a market for MaaS, an open market for MaaS, as you advocate. If there is one policy measure of which you think it can help most towards positive business models, which one would it be? Laurent, are you still with us?
Okay, that's a question to me. Sorry, I thought it was a question to everybody. I think that cooperation between public and private mobility operators is key. I think if you really want to develop MaaS, it's important that you can sell those tickets easily. tickets from public transport easily through that platform. Yeah. I think that's key. Public transport is key for MaaS.
That's quite clear. I see some more questions pop up, but I propose, Laurent, that we move on and maybe take them at the end of the webinar, because we have two further perspectives, I think, that are really interesting. The first one is of a MaaS player, Skipr, known by many people and consumers in Belgium, and it is actually the Skipr CEO, Mathieu, who will take us through their view. Mathieu, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Peter. So lots of very, very interesting insights that have already been shared. My aim here is to actually share with you the feedback that we receive from companies and how we think that MaaS can respond to that. So first of all, before entering the discussion, Skipr is indeed a MaaS platform. We are now really dedicated to companies. When I say companies, really a B2B solution where through the employer, the employee can benefit from an alternative mobility. So that's also why we speak that much with companies, and that COVID has brought a lot of insights from them that I can share here and really show you how we think that MaaS can really become a center and central element of mobility within companies. So when you go to the next slide. So COVID has, mobility has always been an issue. And I think it's pretty clear for companies that mobility is an issue that needs to be tackled, both from a CSR perspective, so corporate social responsibility, for a talent war perspective, for a lot of different aspects. Three numbers that we hear quite often is the time lost in traffic jams in big cities, around 140 hours per year. The fact that owning a car seems to be, for a lot of new employees, actually a waste of asset allocation, because 95% of the time this car is actually unused. And that from various surveys, we see that 45% of people or employees are actually ready to go and move and live closer to their work location in order to be less stuck in traffic. So COVID, how I see COVID is, of course, if we put aside all the catastrophic death, sick people and economical catastrophe that it has brought, when it comes to mobility, I see that as a real accelerator of mobility habits. And if we can go to the next slide, the first big impact that companies see is the impact on public transport. And the first thing they tell us is that, look, I cannot ask my employees to take public transport for now. It's not safe. It has been said everywhere that we cannot have lots of people in public transport. So the first concern, obviously, of companies is to say, look, we need alternatives to public transport. And when I say public transport, it's during peak times. I think it's very important to make a difference. A lot of people are saying that public transport is not safe. It's not true. It's the amount of people that might be come into one vehicle that might be dangerous. It's absolutely not the public transport itself. So luckily, companies understand that arranging different arrival times can be a solution for people to use public transport. The second big problem related to public transport is the lack or the diminished capacity that will be there. So exactly as I just said, that we cannot pack people as we did previously, so not have as many people in every vehicle as in the past. We see now that, and I think you've all heard that the CEO of the STIB saying that full capacity will be back in 1 or 2 years, that in Paris, for example, Valérie Pécresse is diminishing the capacity of the RATP from 5 million daily users to 1 million. So companies are really worried that because of the safety and this capacity reason, which are obviously linked, employees will not be able to come to their work or to go to meetings safely and are looking for alternatives. And that's when I come to, okay, what can be the different alternative? Obviously, public transport will always be there and is a key element, as was just referred, within that whole alternative mobility. When I say alternative, I mean next to being alone in a car in a big city, but at least it brings people to, how would I say, a mindset where they try to be creative in how can there be solutions that is not, and I will come to that necessarily, the cars. when it comes to employee mobility. So we can go to the next slide, please. What we hear often is that there are four alternatives to public transport considered by companies. Again, is first the work from home, and we'll dig into each one a bit later. Second is the bike. Third is everything that we call alternative mobility, so all the shared vehicles that are on the streets. And the last one is the car. And a lot of companies are actually thinking as a first reflex the car, and then are thinking a bit further. If you go to the next slide, the first solution is work from home, so remote working. I think it has already been mentioned, but there is no better way of avoiding traffic jams than just not to move. And companies have put a lot of efforts in the past weeks and months to change their processes, being it in terms of communication or working together, in order to adjust to the lockdown. And so lots of companies now realize that actually remote working, that was a bit, I mean, companies were a lot skeptical about remote working, and I actually know that it's actually performing quite well. Next to pure remote working, companies also think about flexible working hours, whereby workers will be able to go to the office, but maybe not arrive between 8 and 9:30, but come either a bit earlier or a bit later, and then allocate their time a bit differently. How does that impact MaaS, and how can we play a part as MaaS? Well, as you probably know, mobility budget can be applied if the employee spends 12 days or more remote working, which means that even though they don't live within the 5 kilometers boundary, their house is then considered as being the office, and so they can benefit from the mobility budget and pay their rent or the interest on their loans using mobility budget. So there's Skipr as a solution, as a MaaS player, given the fact that we have all our web dashboards and we manage the mobility budget, we can play a role there into facilitating people not to move. And that seems quite weird, and it's always a bit hard to explain, but within the MaaS, I think that a lot of people forget the S of MaaS, which is the service. We need to be able to offer the full service, and we also need to mean something when people don't move, and that's typically an example where we can play a role. If you go to the next slide, so biking, and again, it has been mentioned earlier in the presentation, bike purchases have exploded. Why? Well, because the weather has been outstanding in the past few weeks, let's not forget that, and also because having or riding an own vehicle is considered safer by users. We see that both in the purchase of bikes, also in the use of Billy bikes, that has been able to triple, I think, revenues in the last month. We also see, and companies tell us that they find it outstanding that infrastructure are being put in place by cities in order to compensate capacity of public transport. Again, Paris, 400 kilometers. It has been mentioned, Brussels plus 40 kilometers. There again, how can MaaS benefit? Well, mobility budget allows you to buy a bike. We do have a payment card at Skipr. So again, going to that whole being all in one solution, we can help companies into, okay, employees can buy bikes. It's a viable solution. If we go to next slide, alternative mobility, so there, we'll see in the next slide that, and even though there are some people thinking differently, we think that traffic will increase drastically in September. Why September? Because June, lots of people will be still remote working. July, August, schools are closed. It's really from September that you will have a spike in amount of cars in Brussels, a diminished capacity of lanes, as we said, because, for example, of Rue de la Loi that has one lane less for bikes. There are some articles now referring that it's about roundabouts and not necessarily road capacities. Let's wait and see. But what we see is that alternative mobility can be a truly outstanding alternative to cars within cities. Very important, and what companies and users now need is to make sure that safety is guaranteed by operators. So that's why when we did a webinar last 3 weeks ago, lots of questions were, so with Poppy and Billy, lots of questions were about, okay, how do you guarantee safety? Do you have products in cars to clean the steering wheel in order to avoid the virus, etc., etc.? Sadly, and we see that also in companies, since the government has issued a warning about using alternative mobility, which actually said, do not use alternative mobility if you do not clean your hands or do not have gloves. A lot of companies stop to do not use alternative mobility. And so we see now in certain company policies that alternative mobility shared vehicles are forbidden of use. though we think that when it comes to security or safety, there is nothing dangerous about that, but it needs to be really, I think it's a shorter trend, but in the long-term trend, we will see a use exploding about alternative mobility. How can we help there? Again, mass platform are going to give the trust and comfort that is needed to use shared vehicles. What people lack is actually knowing or having the certainty that they will have an alternative to taking their car or public transport that they know really well. Mass platforms, by gathering all solutions, being one central entry point to all these solutions, provides this level of trust and comfort that is so much needed in order to become a viable option to cars. Last point are cars. Well, normally more cars will mean more traffic jams. So we are really afraid of seeing a massive move to cars. And that's also what companies are trying to avoid. Why? Because what they want to avoid is having their employees stuck in traffic, want to avoid the scissor effect of having more cars in the city with less capacity, which would mean a spike in pollution, but also in time lost and stress. Their way of thinking, I think that it's a common wave, cars have to be used to come to really access points of alternative mobility, public transport, shared vehicle, whatever. So they will encourage their users to take their car, get to the city entries where they can park their car. They all agree, and I think we all agree, that more parkings are obviously needed, or public transport stations, and then they will really enter this alternative mobility. There again, what is the mass advantage? There is, we, for example, at Skipper, we've included own vehicles, bikes, cars, and walking. And so typically in our algorithm, we will suggest taking a car to go to a train station. So we are going to encourage that type of movement. That is what companies are looking. So just to summarize, and I'm already done with the presentation, what's important for companies? Companies want all their employees to know that they, when I mean they, is companies, safeguard the safety of the employees when going or being at work. I think it's very important to realize that whole frame. And so what it means, how our solution can help, well, we can provide white label intermodal app that will take actually account, that will take social distancing into account. For example, we can take public transport out of peak. If we have the data, we could provide density within the vehicles. We can offer full flexibilization and visibility for the companies on the methods of transport used. We are even thinking about being able to offer something different where companies can give their visitors way of getting to the office in order for companies to know that even people that are not employees but visiting the companies also have a safe way arriving at the office, which is something completely different and comes back to the safety going or being at work. So we think a lot about mobility of employees when it's going to the office or home. So often people forget going to meetings, but also a lot of people forget all the people that in the next few months will come to the offices for interviews as a supplier, whatever, that also needs to be treated safely. And that's where we are thinking of right now, is how can we really treat that issue using mass. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mathieu, for a perspective as a real mass provider. I encourage people to use the chat for some questions to Mathieu, seeing that Laurent will leave as announced. So thanks to Laurent. Maybe a quick first question to you, Mathieu. In an earlier webinar that Skipper gave, I noticed that mobility budget can be used also to pay for park and rides. I was pleasantly surprised by that. Now you mentioned that the mobility budget can not only be used to pay for rent of a house closer than 5 kilometers to your work, but also if your work is at home for 12 days per month?
Per month. Yeah, it's per month. It's per month. I forgot the word on the slide. Yeah, it's per month.
Okay, so that's of course quite high. I'm looking at the chat, and maybe just while I look, one last question, Mathieu. We heard from Marijke de Roek, In Antwerp, I see Stan Vernayen is also on the call, that in Antwerp, though, the knowledge of consumers, of mass offers is going up, it is still quite low, a few percentage. What can we do to make the mass offer better known to end users?
That's a very good question. I think there are two ways of doing that. One is obviously marketing and having all different stakeholders communicate on it, being the operators, cities, and the platforms. So there is one thing about getting more visibility and so that people understand it, because for a lot of people, MaaS is only four letters that stand for nothing, and they don't understand the real value add to MaaS, and often are misled between what's the difference between a Skipr or any other platform and Google Maps, to be bluntly rude. The second thing is about the offer itself, and I think that there's one thing that we cannot do right now are kind of subscriptions, where I would love to offer for a certain amount a month unlimited public transport and kick scooters, for example. The problem is that we cannot do that right now because we cannot cap or hedge or risk when it comes to public transport. What I mean is that if somebody takes 6 tickets in other countries, you would have an automatically cap to a day ticket in order not to have a high risk. The risk increasing, which is not possible yet in Belgium. And that's why we cannot really offer tailor-made packages to people, which I think would really help into getting to that alternative mobility mode.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. Heard your comment. I see that Joke Beel and Renaud Therrie of the STIP and of Tech, for instance, are also amongst us. I'm sure that they heard your point as well. I propose that we move to the last presentation of today. And then, as I mentioned before, we will be asking all of you what you think a most impactful policy measure for MaaS will be. Alet, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Peter. And good afternoon to everybody. For those who I've not had the opportunity to meet before, my name is Alet Walker, director in the strategy practice here in Belgium, leading our future of mobility efforts alongside Stijn van der Weer, who many of you know is leading our efforts within public transport and government and public sector. I think obviously, COVID-19 first emerged and became prevalent within China. And I really like the Chinese ancient proverb, a crisis is an opportunity riding the dangerous wind. And I think that's what this seminar is about today, and a little bit is looking beyond the tough moments that we all have at the moment in terms of healthcare and economy, and actually looking at what will define the new normal for mobility. And actually, even more than that, what should define the new normal for mobility? And I think each of us as resilient leaders within the mobility ecosystem has that opportunity to take a pause and look ahead to that mid and long term and see how we can help to reset the way things will look in terms of mobility in Belgium after this crisis. So what I'm going to do now is very quickly examine 5 key trends. These are 5 trends that we see happening today. Think about what these impacts could mean for us in the mid-long term, and then come back to the exam question set by Peter and Kurt around what does that really mean for mobility as a service after Corona. So first of all, in terms of economy, and let's not forget that COVID-19 is a healthcare crisis, that's really driving an economic crisis. So this year, expectations are that the Belgian economy will experience the largest downturn in 80 years, so only really paralleled by World War I and World War II, with an 11% drop in GDP per capita. That will lead to huge issues for businesses, but also really impacting and hitting the wallets of consumers. So estimates are that a potentially 500,000 fewer new cars could be sold in Belgium during the course of the next 5 years, obviously resulting in an aging fleet, but also coming back to one of the messages shared by Dirk around transport poverty. You know, consumers will be looking for other ways of moving from A to B, and potentially more lower priced variable ways of moving from A to B as well. And we can come back to that in a second. Secondly, around safety. Now, consistently in the past, Belgian consumers have said that travel time is the most important aspect when choosing the way that they want to move around. And of course, consumers are, as all of us are, have an increased cautiousness about health at the moment. If we look at lessons learned from China, we've seen that switch from of attractiveness from bus and metro to towards other more private transport modes. But that doesn't mean that that is inevitable, and it doesn't mean that that is has to be permanent. And this is where I think it's good to hear some of the flanking measures mentioned by Stefan earlier around how we can provide reassurance on safety and hygiene in both in terms of masks and payments by card, etc. And I think that there's obviously clearly more to come on that from all types of transport operators, and also in terms of spatial planning, et cetera, as we've discussed. Thirdly, around home working, it was interesting that the first trends mentioned by Peter at the beginning was around acceleration of digitalization, also again by Laurent as well. And it's clearly something that for many of us, for those of us who have the ability to work from home, it's been one of the biggest shifts. So normally, last year, for example, around 1 in 5 of Belgians was sometimes or usually working from home. In the course of the last month, that's become half of us working from home every day. And that's a fundamental shift. And if you look at much literature, typically for a consumer to change their habits takes around 66 days. And for those of you who have been counting, we're more than 66 days since the lockdown started, and that that's triggering some fundamental choices for people around when they come out of the lockdown, actually making much more of a conscious choice around the way that they want to get around, when they want to get around, how they want to get around. And obviously with home working as well, many people are hoping that they can continue that, and we're seeing employers and employees look for more flex working policies and an increased degree of digitalization as well. I think fourth, in terms of sustainability, one of the silver linings of the crisis, if we can call it that, is the immediately positive impact that it's had on our carbon emissions. But there's also some risks here. So we've seen plummeting oil prices at record low and even negative levels. And if you look at previous crises, so take a step back to 2008, for example, we saw that carbon emissions actually rose by 5% afterwards as a result of increased government stimulus that was reinforcing fossil fuel behavior. And again, this is where those flanking measures can be extremely important to make sure that we go back to, or when we restart mobility, that we're not going back to a less green mobility. But I think the risks here are perhaps there. But the signs, I think, are good. If you look at some of the announcements by CDMV, OpenVLD, and Groen around the greenification or proposed greenification of company car fleets by 2025, the letter signed this week by more than 100 leading employers in Belgium as well, sort of supporting that continued greenification, then there are signs that from different angles, be it corporates, policymakers, that sort of sustainability is really now such a core value to many people that hopefully that can be not lost as we come out of this crisis. And fifth trend I just wanted to touch on and try to summarize was also on innovation. And typically in a crisis is really something that can bring a lot of companies to the edge, but it's also then forcing that innovation. And a lot of that innovation will come from startups and scale-ups. And we surveyed more than 70 startups and scale-ups in Belgium. And we saw that the mobility sector was clearly more impacted by the lockdown than any other sector, obviously in terms of acquisition and people being stuck in their homes, but also actually the sector that was most confident that they could come out stronger of the current crisis. And I think that's where many of us in the Mars Alliance and then people on this group will be hopeful and confident that that can also take place during the course of the next years. So to wrap up and try to also tie together some of the comments that we've heard from the previous speakers around what does Corona mean for the future of Mars? So first of all, on the economy and going back to that point of Dirk around transport poverty, actually, you know, that could potentially be a driver or an opportunity for Mars to play a key role in optimizing expenditure for the user, providing that low cost and variable way of choosing how to get around. We talked about safety and the fact that historically that the key most important factor when choosing how to move around was time and cost. And both of those have been, of course, measures that you can use within a Mars app to plan, book and pay for your travel. As Mathieu was saying, there's also the opportunity for Mars apps to look at CO2 emissions. And also perhaps to understand safety, understand how with that kind of real-time data, real-time visibility, provide consumers with visibility of how congested different transport modes are, how safe, how hygienic they are, so that we are providing people with the information that they need to be and feel comfortable about how they get around. Third, around homeworking, and we've talked about it a couple of times today, the acceleration of digitalization. Mars can provide a flexible but reliable way for people to be able to get from A to B. So potentially if that trend continues and tying in with the mobility budget as well, there's clearly an opportunity there for Mars adoption to increase. And also on sustainability, we mentioned it, the shift towards electrification, but also towards facilitating other transport modes, which is something that is on the agenda of all different levels of government, but also in the private sector as well. Going back to what Stefan said earlier on the good neighborhood, good choice kind of initiatives, that's clearly on the agenda there as well. And then finally on innovation. So, you know, this is a crisis, but it's clearly also an opportunity for that innovation. And some of these trends are actually playing into the strengths of Mars, which suggests that, you know, if the ecosystem can collaborate in the right way and the right flanking measures can be put in place by government as well, each of these trends can actually be things that play to the strength of Mars and can help potentially be the trigger to bring Mars to the masses and be a viable solution moving forwards. So I'll leave it there in terms of the five key trends. I think we've had a few questions in there. Electric car sales went up past period, at least relative to total new car sales. Indeed, I think that's one of the, you know, one of the positive messages on sustainability is that one in two consumers is telling us that they want to move away from petrol or diesel for their next vehicle. Also, I was speaking to Laurent and Luke from Febiac 1 or 2 weeks ago, and you know, it's clear also that automotive companies have made the extensive R&D investments in electric vehicles and really also want to support that shift. And the measures I mentioned from government as well are also positive in that direction. So I think we, you know, we see that potentially electric car sales can hopefully continue and perhaps even be accelerated as a result of COVID.
Thank you very much, Alet, for this very crisp presentation and insights. I think maybe for me the element that this makes sense but was a little bit surprising nonetheless is indeed the economic impact and price sensitivity. You have been keeping an eye on the chat and probably saw that there is one more question to everyone, but I'll point it to you because as Stijn Vernaye is, I think, rightly pointing out, Mathieu was kind of hinting it at it as well, and so did Laurent. For Mars providers to have sustainable and working business models, they need to integrate mobility providers. Public transport is the backbone. And that means, of course, room, not only in terms of access to data, but also access to all sorts of ticketing payments, even ideally, let's say, in a way that they can cap, as Mathieu was saying, usage, offering some unlimited usage. So what would your response be on Stan's question and suggestion? How to get access to data? How to get access to ticketing and payments?
Now, I think you know, Laurent answered earlier that he felt that ecosystem collaboration was the most important measure that was needed to enable further adoption of MaaS. And I'd echo that, that the real-time data sharing and access from private sector players to public sector players and vice versa, it needs to be two-way kind of open data exchange is the only way that really MaaS is going to be able to create viable business models, and also to create the right options for people. You know, MaaS is the reason that people historically had cars was to guarantee the ability to get from A to B, and the whole concept of mobility as a service, if it's going to help to disrupt that and enable people to make multimodal travel, it has to guarantee the way to get from A to B. And that will only happen if it's got the different transport modes integrated, and that's what requires that real-time data, that open data across the different types of players.
Yeah. Very clear, and thank you for that. We will be coming to the last part in the end of the webinar. As I mentioned, we would like to run one more exercise with everybody on a key question that has been a red thread for us in the webinar. Briefly summarizing, we've had five great presentations. You all remember Stefan and the Brussels region that has been very proactive and won a EU prize actually for the different measures that put in place. The presentation of Dirk, very insightful, talking about different scenarios, and interestingly also about combinations of scenarios. We've heard Laurent of Fabiac emphasize the future as multimodal. Mathieu of Skipr, who talked about not only a fantastic product, but also how it can be made better by offering unlimited usage of tickets in the future, and extra marketing, and then of course also Alet with high mics on a crisp and comprehensive view. So the question we would like to ask, and please grab your phone for this one, is what is in your view the best policy measure for MaaS and multi-modality? So as we go along, it seems that Stan Verneyen of Antwerp has a bit of a winner with his point on data sharing. Alet also commented on it. We see elements like mobility budget for all coming back a few times, which is expanding from, at this moment, an offer for company car users to all. Many different elements going from digital subscriptions, multimodal hubs to beers. I can certainly confirm that will be useful. And I think the red thread here is, as mentioned earlier, also cooperation and coming to this active ecosystem. We see also the point of earlier speakers popping up on need for infrastructure, I would say multimodal infrastructure. Quite a lot of interesting elements, but obviously, Stan, you will be happy to see that data sharing and access to services is key. Very interesting. People that are familiar with ITS know that we attach a lot of importance on establishing this ecosystem, trusted ecosystem, public, private, across all policy levels to make mass happen. We will continue to work hard on this one. And I think, Kurt, looking at last things popping up, we can round up the webinar by maybe two last important messages. The first one is that Deloitte, supported by ITS, is actually launching a survey, an detailed survey on how mobility will recover and reinvent itself after Corona. You can find the URL for the survey at the bottom of this slide, and we will, of course, quickly also share it with all of you and with our ecosystem. So we warmly encourage you participate in this survey. I'm sure that Deloitte will shortly, I think before the end of June, share the results with you and us. And maybe, Kurt, as a final slide that we typically show, some next webinars that we're planning, and of course, also our Congress of the 24th of September. Please mark your agendas, because this will be an exciting virtual afternoon Congress. I think I can close the webinar on this note. Thanks, Alet, for sharing the URL in the meanwhile, also via the chat, as we will do. Thank you very much to all of you for participating, and especially also to our speakers for sharing their insights. And we look forward to seeing you all very, very soon. Take care.